Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Today we're going to talk about an essential item for devotional service, something in Sanskrit that's known as Shraddha, S-R-A-D-D-H-A, or faith. And it's built in six different phases: dreaming, desiring, delaying, difficulty, dead ends, and then finally deliverance. This is how our faith is built, just like building muscles and strengthening yourself. And this is based on the teachings of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. His guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, defined faith as unflinching trust in something sublime. If you have trust that flowers grow in the sky or that horses lay eggs, that may be faith, it may be an unflinching conviction. Or if you have faith that Hitler is the savior of mankind, that may be fervent, convicted faith, but it's not in something sublime. Something sublime has to come from the personalities who are sublime, the great saints and sages, who are self-realized and who want only the best for human society. And there are many things that we cannot verify with our own senses, and they require faith in order to understand them. In the Vedic literatures, the nature of the soul is described, Keshaga Sataga Bhaga Punat Satamsakari Tara Shama Shukshma Jivara Shurubahayiri. Says the soul, that which animates each and every body, the dimensions of it are 1/10,000th the size of a tip of a hair. And yet that tiny particle of spirit soul is so powerful, it motivates this 110, 180, 210, 3, if you're a lineman, an offensive lineman in the NFL, we're talking like 400 plus pounds. And that tiny soul is motivating and driving that huge, huge mass of muscle and blood and that carcass. And it's also a fact that when the soul leaves the body becomes heavier. You can weigh a body while the soul is in there, and when the soul leaves the body becomes heavier. So there's a buoyancy to the soul as well. And the planets that we see in the sky at night are floating in the air because of the presence of spirit. How could otherwise lumps of matter, which weigh millions and millions and millions and perhaps even trillions and trillions of tons, be floating in space? If I even put out a wisp of cotton, which weighs nothing, it will not float in space. It will go down. So just in the same way that when you lay yourself out in the water, you find that you're floating due to the buoyancy of the soul. And when the soul is absent from the body, then the dead body just sinks down to the bottom of whatever reservoir it's in. So similarly, the planets, because of the presence of spirit, they're huge, huge masses of matter, and yet they're floating in thin air. So these are things that we learn by faith and by information from the scriptures, that because God has entered into each one of these planets through unlimited spiritual potency, they are enabled to float in the sky just like wisps of cotton. We also learn that the creator of the universe is pictured here, Lord Brahma, has four heads. And he appeared originally on a lotus flower. He's described as Shyambhu, self-manifest. As the topmost of all the demigods, he's not created or generated by seminal discharge. He doesn't spend months in gestation in the womb of a mother, but rather he's self-created, basically. He comes out without any of those inconveniences. And being empowered by Krishna, he goes on then to create the universe. And the most important thing we learn by faith is that even if we abandon all of our other duties, even if we give up all varieties of religion, and every religion has tons and tons of rules and regulations, and there are all kinds of dire consequences promised that if you don't follow those rules and regulations, you'll face. But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that even if you give up all those practicing and following of rules and regulations in favor of serving me, in other words, if you give up religion in favor of a relationship with God, Krishna says, don't worry. Don't worry, you will not incur any adverse reactions, no matter what dire consequences are promised. Krishna says, I will personally protect the fully surrendered soul. These are items of faith, which is defined as unflinching trust in something sublime. God intended for our life to be an adventure. He didn't intend for us to just breathe and eat and drink and flap our arms for 60 or 80 years and then just die. He meant life to be an adventure. And unfortunately, a lot of people who are supposed to be connected to God through one different faith or another don't seem to be living life on the thrill level. A lot of them looks like they just ate vinegar. They're very sour-faced. They're very negative because they're focused on all the rules and regulations. They're focused on all the thou shalt nots. And they're not experiencing life as the adventure that it should be. The fact is that Krishna wants to do great things in our life. And the greater our faith is, the more exciting and more adventurous our life will be. That's our function, basically. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the Paramatma. He's the Super Soul within our heart. He's making my hands gesture like this. He's actually making me speak. He's, on His sanction, I'm being able to see. All my function is, as a tiny little spirit soul, is just having faith. That's all I've got to do. Faith that if I surrender to God, then He'll do wonderful things through me. I will become the instrument of the greatest puppet master of all time. But the only thing I have to do is have faith. That's all. And according to the strength of my faith, greater and greater things will be done. According to faith, things which would normally be deemed impossible become very, very possible. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it says that with faith, that which was an uncrossable ocean, with faith, Krishna shrinks that ocean into as much water as you can fit in the imprint of a cow in the field, something which can easily be stepped over. But the fulcrum, the leverage point, is faith. And how do we build our faith? How do we exercise our faith? Well, that's what today's talk is about. There are 8 different processes for building our faith, without which we achieve nothing in life. Bhagavad Gita says, those who are not faithful in devotional service cannot attain me. They return to birth and death in this material world. The most asked question of ministers in any religion, whatever it is why is this happening to me? Pastor, why is this happening to me? Priest, why is this happening to me? Rabbi, why is this happening to me? So if you understand the 6 phases that we're going to discuss today, you'll avoid being resentful, you'll avoid being depressed, you'll avoid being fearful, and most of all, you'll actually be able to cooperate with Krishna's plan for your life. If you don't understand these 6 phases, these faith building, these muscle building phases, you're just going to be bewildered and resentful and driven to do something which is not in your best interest. But if you understand these 6 phases, you're going to say, okay, I'm in phase number 3. I'm in phase number 3. I went through, I had a dream, I made a decision, and now I'm going through delays and difficulties. So I can handle that. I can understand where I'm at, where I've come from, and where I'm going. The first stage is dreaming. Well, we all have dreams. But the question you do have to ask is, when you have a dream, something that appeals to you, is it something that's coming from God, or is it something that's coming from some other source? Is it God speaking to you, or is it the bad lasagna that you ate last night that's speaking to you? You have to determine this, because if you're going to use a lot of your life's energy in this direction, you need to make sure that this is a genuine, bona fide, spiritual uplifting dream. This is something that God actually wants done, and it's not just indigestion from last night's meal. So Bhagavad Gita says that faith is of 3 kinds, according to the modes of nature that we're in. There's a mode of goodness, there's a mode of passion, and a mode of ignorance. And depending on what mode of nature you're in, you're going to get a particular type of a vision or a faith predicated upon that mode of nature. Here's the most famous dream speech of all time. Martin Luther King stood up in Washington, D.C., and he said he had a dream where black and whites could live equally under the law. And here are some of the catchphrases that come out of that that civil rights movement and that speech of Martin Luther King. We have a whole collage of phrases here on the screen. Ring, together, nation, justice, black, Alabama, insufficient, new, rights, hope, Negro, injustice, satisfied, free, men, American, white, suffering, and it just goes on and on and on. But really, really, God's dream for you, or God's plan, is much more simple than that. It's not fractured in 100 different phrases and catchphrases and slogans. This is the essence of it right here in the Bhagavad Gita, 5th chapter, 18th verse. The humble sages, by virtue of true knowledge, see with equal vision learned and gentle Brahman, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. If you have this vision, you'll see every living being, not just black and white, not just Christian, Hindu, Muslim, or Jew, not just human beings. You'll see every living being, not only human beings, but llamas and parrots and birds and peacocks. You'll see all living beings as parts and parcels of the same Supreme Father. They may have different bodies according to their karma in this present life, but basically, as spiritual entities within the body, they're all the same. One person may drive a Cadillac SUV, and another person may have a skateboard. One person may have a go-kart, and another person may be in a jet plane. If you disregard the vehicles which are given to us according to our karma, the drivers are the same. The driver of the jet plane is not greater than the driver of the go-kart. They are both equal under the law. And so every spirit soul is equal and beloved of God, irrespective of their karmic circumstances in the present body that they're in. So faith evolves according to the following sequence. This is from Krishnadas Kaviraj in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Ado shraddha tato sadusang tato bhajana kriya tato narta nirvitishat tato nishtya ruchishtata. Faith starts when one sees, say, for instance, the Hare Krishnas chanting. One comes to the festival of colors, or one sees the devotees chanting out in the streets. I had a family, a lady with three kids and her husband. They came and today, and I gave them a tour, and we spent quite a bit of time talking and answering her questions. And she had come to the Festival of Colors with some of her friends and just had a wonderful time. She hadn't come with her children or husband, but it stirred her faith. She wondered, well, what is this chanting? What is the meaning of this festival? And I'd like to know more about it. And so, at the first opportunity that she and her family had the day off, she brought her husband, she brought her kids, and she was very, very seriously inquiring about the different points of spiritual life. And that had all come just because she came out with some friends just to have some fun. It wasn't a serious venture to come to the Festival of Colors, it was just to have some fun. But then she became curious. Ado shraddha tato sadusang. What is all this about? And today was the follow-up visit. And as a result of this visit, she got a more in-depth understanding of what we went, aside from just the official, you know, emceeing that went on that festival day. We sat down and we talked about things even more deeply. So from shraddha, a little bit of curiosity, comes what we call sadhusang, or associating with people who are learned and well-versed and dedicated to spiritual pursuits. After that, when one begins to seriously mull over these things and spiritual realization crystallizes as a desirable goal, one considers, what do I have to do in order to get it, and what do I have to give up in order to get it also? Is there anything that's impeding me? At that point, gross addictions like illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating should be cast aside. If one wants to have faith in the mode of goodness and therefore get dreams and visions which are genuinely divine and not polluted, then one should give up these four activities which are in the mode of ignorance and the mode of passion. No meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. After which, tato bhajana kriya, tato narta nichishtata, one should seek the initiation from a realized soul, a bona fide spiritual master who can give one diksha, which is called spiritual initiation. We have our material fathers from whom we get our bodies. And we have this in common with every snake, with every heron, with every camel, with every species on the planet. There's always a material father and mother. But only in the human society, after seeking the absolute truth, can we get our ditcha, or second initiation, from a spiritually realized soul. And that spiritually realized soul connects us to the divinity. Just like electricity is everywhere, someone may say, well, why should I seek initiation? Why should I give these things up? Why should I seek initiation from a bona fide spiritual master? Surely knowledge is everywhere, God is everywhere. Why these particular channels are recommended? We use the example, electricity is everywhere, but you cannot just access electricity willy-nilly or through some sentiment. There's a process of bringing the wires and tapping into the powerhouse. Then if you go to the outlet, you plug in and you get connected. So we're going to talk about the chain of disciplic accession, how some great, great souls linked themselves up and got dreams and did something wonderful for the world. And maybe, just maybe, we can follow in their footsteps. When God gives you a dream, it's something that, first of all, you'll recognize it because it's more than you can accomplish on your own. It's much, much more than you can accomplish on your own. God doesn't have little dreams. He has big dreams that benefit lots and lots and lots of people. And you're not going to be able to do it on your own without His help. And also, His word, His will will never contradict His word. Someone said, I had a dream the other night to go to Hollywood and become a star. See? Well, that's a dream probably not born out of the mode of goodness. That's probably a dream born out of some sort of intoxicant or some sort of a delusion or a hallucinatory activity. And that in itself is a hallucination because there's only one star, really, and that's Krishna. And we hook ourselves up to His star and we achieve greatness. Otherwise, independent of Him, there is no greatness. Just like a leaf which is detached from a tree, not only does that leaf cease to flourish, but it dries up and dies. So Krishna's will never contradict His word. Having done all this and laid the ground and set the soil, be prepared for excitement. Be prepared for wonderful dreams. Langston Hughes wrote a poem, hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow. This is a picture of Bhaktivinod Thakur, who lived how long ago? 100 and some years ago. At the turn of the century, he was a great, great devotee of Krishna. He was a magistrate, chief magistrate in the holy town of Jagannath Puri, appointed by the British. And he had a dream that he would excavate and find the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. After he retired from Jagannath Puri, he went to the holy place of Navadvip, where Krishna had appeared 500 years ago as his own devotee. And although Lord Chaitanya appeared 500 years ago, a lot of the places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes had been forgotten and covered over with leaves and foliage. So Bhaktivinod Thakur had a dream. And in a dream, he saw a certain field with some tulsi leaves growing everywhere. And he went to Navadvip and he looked everywhere. Every day he'd go out walking to see this field with tulsi leaves. Tulsi is especially beloved to Krishna. And one day he saw this place. It was grown over with weeds and brambles and all, but there were tulsis growing there. And it corresponded with the place that he dreamed about. And he said, I think this is the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, in the previous picture, you see over his right shoulder, this is the temple that was eventually built on the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, called the Yoga Peeth. Now, Bhaktivinod Thakur wasn't 100% certain that this was the place. So he brought his guru, Gorkishore Das Babaji, Jagannath Das Babaji, to verify. He thought, if I bring my guru here and my guru feels the same thing that I'm feeling, then that'll cap it. Now, Jagannath Das Babaji was about 115 years old at that time. He couldn't walk. He was crippled in his legs. They had to carry him everywhere in a basket. In fact, he was so old that when he wanted to open his eyes, he had to lift his eyelids with his fingernail. And if he wanted to keep his eyes open, he had little props for that. So when they brought Jagannath Das Babaji to this field where tulsi leaves were going, he jumped 30 feet in the air. And Bhaktivinoda took that as all the confirmation that he needed. So he wanted to build a temple then, based on his dream, in the mode of goodness, connected to the great spiritual masters. So he was a magistrate in Puri. This is a very, very high position. You get a lot of honor if you're the chief judge in a place like Puri. But Bhaktivinoda went begging door to door in order to raise funds to build that temple that you saw on the screen before. And then, of course, the temple is the result of Bhaktivinoda's single-handed efforts. Then, when the temple was built, Bhaktivinoda stood on the porch of his house on the Jalungi River in Navadvip Dham, and he had another dream, another vision. He said that one day people from all countries of the world will come to Sri Mayapur, the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, and they'll chant Jai Satchinanda, Jai Satchinanda, which is the name of Lord Chaitanya, and they'll dance in great ecstasy and do Sankirtan, congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord. And he also wrote of a great personality who would fulfill his vision of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. So you see here this sampradaya, starting with Lord Chaitanya 500 years ago, the six Goswamis, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gaurakishore Babaji, Prabhupada's guru Bhaktisiddhanta, and then A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. You'll notice if you've been coming here regularly, we just got a new vyasasan, a new seat for Srila Prabhupada. I ordered it in Bombay in 2008, January 2008. I went to Chaupati, I talked to Ajit Mistry, who's the carver there, and I said, Ajit, we want a nice carved seat for Prabhupada here in our temple. How long will it take you to carve it if I give you a good down payment? It'll take 2 months and then 2 months shipping. So January, February, March, April, end of May latest, 2008. It came 3 days ago. But that's India for you. It's only a year late. But was it worth waiting for? What do you think? And we're getting a marble base for it that'll be about 18 inches high, and there'll be some steps, so Prabhupada will be much more elevated than he is now. So this is the chain of discipline. None of these personalities ate meat, illicit sex, gambling, intoxication in their whole lives, and they're linked up to Krishna in the form of Lord Chaitanya through the process of initiation. Now, that's the dream. But some people, even though they have a dream or they see a dream that's being had by a great soul, they prefer bondage rather than risk. You cannot fulfill your dream without some element of risk. But most people will put up with a situation that's not God's will rather than take a risk and trust God. They will not take the risk to be open, the risk to be free, or the risk to confront a problem. They like safety rather than risk. And out of 10 people that have a dream, only one will make a decision to act upon it. So Bhaktivinoda saw one great personality coming. This was no secret. Bhaktivinoda wanted Krishna consciousness to spread to every town and village of the world. Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's son, he had hundreds of disciples and he opened 64 temples all over India. And it was no secret that he wanted temples open in the Western countries. He told everyone that this Krishna consciousness will spread all over the world. So it wasn't like a secret that was kept in a box or something. Everybody knew it. But only Prabhupada, out of hundreds and hundreds of disciples, actually made the decision, took the risk to fulfill the dream of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, proving that faith is not passive. Faith is not really a noun, it's a verb. It's something active. And you need to go through these six phases of faith building. Here it is said that Prabhupada is the dream fulfiller of Bhaktivinoda Thakur under the direction and guidance of his dearmost guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada. The conception originally came with Bhaktivinoda, and Bhaktisiddhanta gave shape to that in the form of the 64 temples that he established in the early 1900s in India. And from those temples, he sent out his missionaries, and one of them, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, took that dream and fulfilled it all over the world. We're very proud of being associated with him. He did what others could only dream of. When you have a dream, you need to make an investment. You may invest time, you may invest money, you may invest energy, you may invest reputation, and you may invest all of those things. And those investments in a dream, in a spiritual dream, are called sacrifice, which takes different forms according to the particular faith of the performer. When one's faith reaches the stage of transcendental knowledge, the performer should be considered more advanced, for without attainment of knowledge, there is no spiritual benefit. Why did all those great saints and sages make the sacrifices culminating with Srila Prabhupada? Why did they do that? Only so that we can be enriched by transcendental knowledge. No other reason. They didn't sacrifice so you could have a better car, that you could have a bigger house, that you could have more toys and bells and whistles and iPods and computers and friends on Facebook. No, they didn't sacrifice their purity, their talents and their energies just so that you can have baubles and whistles. They sacrificed so that you could have transcendental knowledge. And we're distributing transcendental knowledge here. To all of 25 people. The fact is that if you want to walk on water, if you want to experience faith, if you want to live life as the adventure it's meant to be, if you want to walk the walk and talk the talk that God meant you to do, if you want to walk on water, you got to get out of the boat. You got to take a risk. It's like the trapeze artist. Trapeze artist is swinging on one bar, the other bar is coming up. You cannot hold on to both bars at the same time. You cannot keep this bar and grab that bar. You have to let go of this bar, and for a few fractions of a second, you're suspended there in outer space, 150 feet above the ground, with no net. And then you get the other bar. If you're not willing to do that, you're not going to get the other bar. If you want to hold on to this bar, you'll just go back, and you won't even go back to where you started. The arc will just get shallower and shallower and deeper, and you'll just go down and down and down and down. So life is not meant for comfort. Life is meant for character. And you don't get character unless you're willing to exercise your faith, and you're not going to build your faith unless you're willing to take a risk. These were the very last words that Bhaktisiddhanta spoke when he passed away in 1936. These were the last words of advice he gave to his hundreds and hundreds of disciples. Fix an ultimate goal for your life. Decide where you will have to go and what you will have to do so that your soul will be happy. Don't go towards material enterprises. One day this mundane body will become old and poisoned by many diseases. It will then be finished. Yet at that time, if you have given your body to Krishna for His service, your life will be a success. Offer this very wretched body to Krishna. First is dream, then decide. Then you say, okay, Lord, I decided. You know, I'm the one in ten that decided. I'm going to go for it. All right, Lord. Okay, Lord. Lord, let's get moving. Especially as Americans. We hate to wait. But the third phase of faith building is going to be delay. And we can't stand delay. We got fast food. We got instant gratification. We got wideband. We got broadband. We got wireless. We got to have it now. We got to have it. We insist upon it. And especially, we don't want to wait for God. We don't want to wait for God. You know, God, I can't wait for you. I'm just going to go ahead and make a big botch out of the whole thing. Instead of waiting for God to line up everything, for it to be done right. And maybe God wants to work on you a little bit too. Maybe one of the reasons for the delay is that He wants to work on you a little bit so that your character is a little bit better, so that you're a better instrument, so that you're more transparent. And that might be one of the reasons for the delay too. I find this all the time in relationships between me and my wife. In fact, in the marriage ceremony, there's a phrase amongst the vows of the couple. The groom turns to the bride and says, I am heaven and you are earth. Now that might sound a little flattering to the man. The man says, I am heaven and you are earth. Actually, nothing is further from the truth. Basically, what he's admitting to is being a ditz. Being a dreamer with his feet not on the ground. And men are so impatient and they're so temperamental, with emphasis on temper, right, ladies? They always want something yesterday. But it's the women who say, hold on there, Hoss. Hold on there, Hoss. If we're going to do it, slow down. Count to 10. Line up your ducks. Let's do it right. You know, my wife and I play out the scenario every day. Honey, I got a great idea. Let's do it. Let's do it. She says, okay, but we got to do it right. And I said, I can't wait. I can't wait. I just know we got to do it now. And she always insists that we delay and we do the research and we make the phone calls and we do it the proper way. And she's always right. She's always right. So God is like that also. He doesn't do anything impetuously. He's not in a mood. I feel like if I don't do it right away, my mood might change. My mood might change. And then tomorrow I might not be in the mood to do it. I might not have the inspiration. My inspiration waxes and wanes like the phases of the moon. Or I might forget about it altogether. Gosh, what was I thinking about? You know, what I might not even remember it like that. But God is not forgetful, is not moody. That because something's going to be delayed does not mean it's not going to happen. You know, God has been causing the sun and the moon to rise and set on time for millions and millions of years. So He has patience that I don't have. He has determination that I can only dream of. So that it's not happening right away does not mean it's not going to happen. We need to go to the University of Learning to wait if we're going to build our faith. The mills of God grind slowly, yet they grind exceeding small. Though with patience He stands waiting, with exactness grinds He on. Gandhiji, took him 30 years to get independence. He had a dream in 1918 to quit the dependence on England. And it wasn't until 1948, 30 years later, during which he spent 15 of those years in jail, that by God's arrangement, finally India got its independence from Britain. And he said, Providence has its appointed hour for everything. We cannot command results. We can only strive. Now, here are the Himalayan mountains. They're just sitting there, and they're just waiting for the seasons to change and the ages and the millennium to go by. They're cool, man. They're chilled out. You ever heard, you know, you're in a hurry? Anyone ever told you, chill out? Well, here's the original chill out guys, the Himalayan peaks. Prabhupada himself, he got in 1922, I believe it was, his guru told him, you go to the Western countries and preach. And it wasn't until 1965 that he finally went. He cherished that instruction. He made arrangements. He raised his family. He educated his kids. He got them off on their own. And then he went out to execute the order of his spiritual master. Valmiki, the author of the Ramayana, we learn that Valmiki lived in the Satya Yuga, one of the previous ages, where people lived for up to 100,000 years. And Valmiki had this dream of following and envisioning all the pastimes of Lord Ram. But it took 60,000 years of meditation before that dream came to fruition in the consciousness of Valmiki. Even Hiranyakashipu, the great demon who harassed his son Prahlad Maharaj, he also stood on one leg for 125 years by the calculations of the demigods. He stood on his legs so long that an anthill formed over his body. And the ants ate all the flesh of his body. And he became just a skeleton with the life air circulating inside of his bones. And eventually he got what he wanted by waiting. So waiting teaches us to trust in God, and it teaches us in His timing. So part of faith building is waiting and putting up with delays. Do your children know the difference between no and not yet? Do your children know the difference between no and not yet? If you say not yet, do they take it to mean no? Because they shouldn't. Not yet does not mean no. It just means not now. It means when you're ready for it. So God's plan and your plan, you have a dream, but God's implementation of that dream, God may be saying not yet. It doesn't mean no. It just means when you're ready for it. Now, another thing we get to experience is while there's delays, we get to have difficulties. Sounds like a lot of fun, doesn't it? Not only do we get to wait, but we get difficulties also. We get problems. And those problems come in two ways. Circumstances and critics. Following the desire of his spiritual master, Prabhupada, these are all the steps that Prabhupada took to try to establish a basis for the Krishna conscious movement. He came, and within 12 short years, from 65 to 77, he established 108 centers. But it took him 40 years to get ready for that day. And here are some of the difficulties, circumstances, and critics, including his own wife, which he had to put up with during that period of delay. Following the desire of his spiritual master, Prabhupada began publishing his Back to Godhead magazine in 1944. It was difficult in the beginning. He wrote the magazines himself. This is in India. Had them printed. Even rode into town on the bus to distribute these one-page sheets. But he never stopped. Srila Prabhupada had also written a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita that was 1,100 pages long, but somewhere it was stolen. Imagine that. You write an 1,100-page commentary and it gets stolen. So you have to start all over again. He had also started as League of Devotees, a small organization of Krishna conscious people. It was a forerunner of what was to be the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which he founded after he came to America. Prabhupada's wife, however, was not interested in all this spiritual stuff. She used to protest about the meetings and his preaching activities. This was getting in the way of his mission. In fact, one time Prabhupada came home to discover his wife was very fond of tea and biscuits. Prabhupada came home one time to discover that his wife, he couldn't find his Srimad Bhagavatam. He couldn't find his copies of the Srimad. He said, "Where is the Srimad Bhagavatam?" And she said, "I sold them to buy biscuits for tea." And then Prabhupada said, "You need to decide, tea or me?" And she jokingly said, "Tea." And then he left home. Finally, he's ready. Krishna said, "Now it's time to go to the Western country." And you reach a point where you think it's a dead end. You actually begin to wonder, after all this dreaming, deciding, delaying, difficulty, then you reach a point of impossibility, a dead end. And you begin to wonder, did I just cook all this up? Is this just a figment of my imagination? Because it doesn't really seem like God wants this. It seems like we have reached an impossible position here. Well, congratulations. You're in good company. You're in good company. The Vedic literatures, all spiritual texts throughout the world are full of devotees, saints, who just came to a point of impossibility. Here's an example here. Draupadi was the most beautiful lady of her day. And she was the wife of the Pandava brothers. Every warrior, every prince in the world envied the Pandavas for being married to the most beautiful lady in the world, a veritable Lakshmi. And they wanted to bring her down. They wanted to humiliate her. They wanted to shame her. They wanted to soil her reputation. So they contrived to have a game of dice with the Pandavas, and they cheated, so they actually won the wife of the Pandavas away from them in a crooked gambling match. Then they thought they had Draupadi just where they wanted her. She was a defenseless lady. Her husband, you see them sitting on the right. Their hands are on their heads. They are prevented by the rules of the match from lifting a finger to help out their wife. Big, strong Maharajas who could kill 10,000 warriors at a time. But they were prohibited by the laws from doing anything because they'd lost their wife. And then on the other side, Dushasan and Duryodhan, who've been dreaming of tarnishing her reputation for years, and now the fulfillment of their desire. So they brought her into the assembly and they began to pull off her sari. They began to pull off. Sari is about 8 yards. So you got 8 yards and then you have an exposed lady. And Draupadi was in an impossible situation. One lady against dozens and dozens of big, big, strong warriors. Her husbands are helpless. She's reached a dead end. She's reached a dead end. What do you do when you can't do anything else? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You turn to Krishna. When you've got no one else to turn to, you turn to Krishna. Devotees take pleasure in hearing and glorifying the Lord in devotional service. They are convinced that by doing so, all their objectives will be fulfilled. At first, Draupadi was holding onto the sari with two hands and not doing, not holding her own because this big, strong Dusa son is pulling it off, ripping it from her hands. So then she thought, well, I'll hold on with one hand and I'll go to Krishna with the other hand. Krishna, Krishna. And she still, the sari was going. Then she said, okay, Krishna, please save me. She let go. She let go. And that should have been it. With no more resistance, Dusasana should have just been able to whisk that cotton off, and there's Draupadi. Forever tarnished, forever ashamed. She would have literally had to commit suicide before she would be able to show her face in public anymore. Of course, nowadays women go naked all over the place, but that this is a different culture than that culture. And so she said, Krishna, Krishna, and then Krishna supplied. You see Krishna up there? He's... it's faster than Dusasana can take it off, Krishna's putting it on again. He's supplying unlimited sari. In fact, this big, strong Dusasana, after some time, he just couldn't pull any more cloth. And he just fell to the ground, completely exhausted. So Prabhupada also, he thought, I'm never going to get out of India. There's too many difficulties. There's too many things against me. His friends, even other saints, they said, Swamiji, you're an old man. You're 70 years old. You can't. You're crazy. You're going to go to America. You don't know anybody. You don't have any money. Your health is not that good. You're just going to die on the street. You're just going to die on the street. You shouldn't go. Stay here where you're safe. And at that point, when Prabhupada thought he'd reached a dead end, his guru came to him in a dream, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and told him, the last thing you need to do, you showed him just, last thing you need to do is take sannyas, officially renounce your family life, and prepare. And Prabhupada said, later on, he woke up, have you ever woken up at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and Prabhupada woke up, he said, I was horrified, take sannyas, leave my family, give up my business. But he says his Guru Maharaj forced him to do it. And that was his mercy. His mercy. So in 1959, Prabhupada accepted the order of sannyas at the Gaudiya Math Keshava Temple in Mathura to give up materialistic life and further execute the order of his spiritual master by preaching and writing in the English language. And on your left here is his Guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And then this is Prabhupada's sannyas guru sitting down, Keshav Bharati. And then this is Prabhupada on the right. Two souls took sannyas. Prabhupada finally came to America. He had two heart attacks on the ship on the way across the ocean. He arrived in New York City in 1965 with $7 and he didn't know anybody. He was living in the Bowery with a boy named David. Now that area, I think even now, today, it's become gentrified somewhat, but in those days it was known as Skid Row. Drunks and vagrants lived there. It was the most corrupt and dangerous place in the world. It was no place for a saint from India. Undaunted, Prabhupada chanted and translated. One day, David, mad on LSD, attacked Prabhupada with a knife. Dead end? Maybe, but not for Krishna. Nothing's impossible for Krishna. Prabhupada fled that apartment. He went to Mukunda Maharaj's apartment. He told Mukunda Maharaj, I've just been chased with a knife by my tenant who was mad on LSD. So then at that time, the loose coalition of hippies who had been coming around and listening to Swami's lectures, they decided that they would do something. They made a decision to implement the dream of Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta, and they did it. And here's the first Hare Krishna temple in the Western countries, 26 Second Avenue. They pulled their money, they rent a little storefront, and there was a little apartment for Prabhupada, and I visited there just 1 month ago. First time I went there, it's still owned by ISKCON. There's still programs, Monday and Tuesday and Friday nights with prasadam and chanting for college students. But this is the first temple of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And from there, once Prabhupada got it established, then he went to San Francisco, he opened another temple, then he had to leave to renew his visa. He had to spend some months out of the United States, so he opened temples in Canada. Then he came back, and 108 centers he opened. So then finally, after the previous five phases, then finally at the point when everything seems darkest and most impossible, then deliverance. And I put the picture here of Gajendra. Gajendra was an elephant who was drinking water one day and his foot was grabbed by a crocodile. The elephant is the king on land, but on water it's not his element. So the crocodile grabbed his foot and the crocodile is pulling the elephant further into the water and the elephant's pulling back. And at first the elephant's very strong. He's very strong and he's resisting the efforts of the crocodile. But after a while, because after all his feet are not on land, it's not his natural environment, the elephant weakens and weakens and weakens and weakens. And then like Draupadi, Gajendra said, "Krishna, I don't have any strength anymore. This crocodile is going to win unless you help me." So Krishna sent his Sudarshan Chakra and then chopped off the head of that crocodile. Krishna loves to turn dead ends into deliverance. In the Mahabharata, the Pandavas went into the forest in exile for 14 years. They had all kinds of dangers. It seemed like there was no hope for their redemption, for them to ever get their kingdom back. And in the end, Krishna brought them back from an impossible situation. They won a great war, and they were reinstalled in their ancestral palace. At that point, Kunti, the queen of the Pandavas, went to Krishna and said, "Vipara shantu tashasha tata tata jagadguru bhavato darshanamayatsa apanar bhava darshana." Kunti said, "Krishna, all those years, we were in the forest. We didn't have silken beds. We didn't have bodyguards and retainers. We were sleeping on the ground. And we had to have watchmen because of the ferocious beasts. And we were always being attacked. And Duryodhana was always trying to kill us. And 14 years we spent in exile, just living from hand to mouth. But you know what? We built our faith through dreams and delays and difficulties and dead ends. We built our faith and you never failed us. You are always faithful. You say in the Bhagavad Gita that you will protect your surrendered soul. And you always protected us. When things were darkest, when it seemed like we were lost, you always came through for us. And now we're back in the palace and everything's comfortable. And the clouds have broken and the sun's shining out. You know what, Krishna? I want to go back into the forest. That was so much fun. Let's do it again." You ever had children? You ever had little children? And you throw them high up in the air. And they go up, you know, and then you catch them. And they say, "Again, again," you know. So and then if you could do it 100 times, "Again, again." So your life is meant to be an adventure. The Pandavas had great faith. For them it was fun. It was pastime. When they got everything back to normal, they said, "Hey, let's do it again. Let's do it again." So let's now think about this in the context of our own lives. Dream. Has Krishna given you a dream? Are you in the mode of goodness, first of all? Are you free from intoxication, illicit sex, gambling? Can you trust your dream? Are you in the mode of goodness? Are you getting a dream in the mode of goodness? Or are you getting a dream in the mode of passion? Or are you getting a dream in the mode of ignorance? That's the first thing. Are you connected? Are you working towards getting yourself hooked up to the line of disciplic succession and saintly devotees so you feel the power of the Lord? If you don't have a dream, then you need to start praying. "Krishna, give me a dream. Light up my life. I don't want to just exist and breathe and take up space. I want to live my life the way you intended it to be lived." If you can't write down the dream God has given you, you need to be praying. If you don't have a dream, you're not living. Krishna doesn't want that for you. He wants so much more. You're here on this earth for a purpose. When you discover that purpose, that's your dream. That's what Krishna wants you to go for. And then the next stage is make a decision. Some of you have got a dream from Krishna, but you've not made a decision to go for it. You're still sitting on the fence. Krishna's word for you at stage two is make a decision, take a risk. Some of you need to make that decision to surrender to Krishna. Then there's going to be delays. What's caused my dream, if I have it, to be delayed? If your prayer hasn't been answered, don't worry about it. It's okay. You're in the waiting room. Don't detour. Don't get ahead of God. When things don't happen on our timetable, we tend to run ahead of Krishna and create detours to make it happen. And you may end up making the wrong decision. Wait, wait, wait for Krishna to work His hand. And difficulties. What difficulties have I faced waiting for the dream to fulfill? It's just that you're going to be tested. And it's not going to be the last time. You'll go through many, many such faith-building tests in life. And Krishna knows exactly what you're going through. He's in the heart of each and every living being. He knows every hair in your head. He knows every detail of your life. And you're not going to surprise him. Say, Krishna, boy, you won't believe what I went through today. And Krishna's going to say, oh, you got to be kidding me. That one took me by surprise. No way. He knows everything. He knows what you're going through. And you're going through it for his benefit. He's watching. Don't think he's forgotten you. He hasn't. When you come to a dead end, are you ready to give up? Because you're right where Krishna wants you. You're just right on in the dark just before the dawn. You're getting prepared for deliverance when things look the worst. God's word for you is hang on. Keep on believing. Don't give up. Do I expect and trust Krishna to deliver me? He will. According to your faith, it will be done to you. Krishna is faithful. What he tells us to do, he will do. It doesn't happen overnight. You go through dream, decision, delay, difficulty, dead end, and then comes deliverance. With me, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.